From the pulpit of the Capital City Baptist Church, we present Pulpit Echoes, a ministry of Pastor Adam Thompson and the Capital City Baptist Church. I'd invite you to stay with us because at the end of the broadcast, we'll give you our contact information. And now with a message from the Word of God, here's Pastor Adam Thompson.
Genesis 21, we'll read verses 1 and 2. And the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. And Sarah conceived and bare Abram a son in his old age at the set time. Tonight we're looking at the God of times and seasons. Here we see the phrase in verse 2, at the set time. Learning to trust God's timing is often very difficult. Regrettably, even though we grow in the faith, sometimes just waiting, this is a generation that doesn't know anything about waiting. Everything's an instant. You can buy it in a box. You can throw it in the microwave. You can run through the drive-thru. How amazing how perturbed we are by any kind of wait at all. Boy, you talk to an American, and if it's fast food and if he has to wait more than 6 minutes, he's banging on his dashboard and screaming at the car in front of him and saying, "Don't call this fast food!" Rehearsing the words in his mind, what he's going to say when he gets up to the window to let them know they didn't get the food out fast enough. And we're just an impatient society. I mean, if you sit at a stoplight and the person in front of you doesn't notice that light is green within 5 seconds, he's going to know that you noticed the light was not green. And he's going to know that right now you're not a Christian. That's why we don't pass out bumper stickers for Capital City Baptist Church. I couldn't deal with all the phone calls from irate people that have been honked at on the road. But we're impatient and trusting God's timing. And in this case, we're not talking about a few minutes or a few months or a few years. We're talking about decades that Abraham had waited on God and waited for God to give him a son. And we all, at times, we see it in our kids. It's just hard to see it in ourselves. We understand that children are impatient. But we forget that we too sometimes are very impatient, especially when it comes to God and God's will and what he's doing in our life. But at the set time, you think about this for a moment. Abraham is 100, Sarah is 90 years old. That was the set time. That's not the way we would work things. That's not the way we would think. That's not the way we would time the birth of a child. But that was God's perfect plan, that we know that this was going to defy the laws of nature. But God's the creator of all nature, and so to reverse the laws of nature is not an issue at all. Timing is not a problem to him. He's thinking way down the road. We're thinking the immediate, usually the immediate gratification of ourselves, our needs, our desires. So let me make this a little bit practical tonight, because for those of you that are single, you're going to get impatient at some time concerning the timing of your mate, saying, "God, I'm ready now. And if you go ahead and bring that beautiful young lady my way, I'm ready." And God says, "No, not yet." But I know people that have gotten very disgruntled with God and his timing concerning a mate. Mothers that have gotten disgruntled with God concerning the timing of the birth of a child. Or husbands have gotten disgruntled with God over the timing of increased income. Or for some of our youth, ministry opportunity. For some, it's the, "God, I don't understand your timing concerning my calling, and I thought I'd be further along, and I thought you'd have a door open for me by now." But we understand that timing is everything in life. I remember in my youth, boy, I was in a hurry to do everything. I was in a hurry to graduate. I was in a hurry to go to Bible college. I was in a hurry to get married. I was in a hurry. Everything was in a hurry, and the next step had to be now. I remember graduating from Bible college at 20 years of age, graduating on Friday, getting married on Saturday. That's called being in a hurry. Getting to the field, running ahead of God at times. Have you ever run ahead of God? Trying to push God to understand your watch was the right watch and he wasn't paying enough attention to your watch. He wasn't noticing the timing that you were trying to put on his calendar. Abraham was in a hurry. God was not in a hurry. And Abraham and Sarah, at some point, I believe several times, had probably given up, started thinking that Ishmael was the promised seed. But we see that God the Bible says in verse 1, he visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. He kept his word, and everything was right on time, the way he had planned it. Explaining this to children at times is difficult. Getting them to understand that the right thing at the wrong time is the wrong thing. All kids at some point are going to want the right thing just at the wrong time. So they want a vehicle. They just want it when they are 16. A car is a good thing. A driver's license is a good thing. And isn't it amazing how you as a parent, you know based on each one of your children, that one of them needs their license at 18, one of them needs their license at 17, and the other one needs their license at 28. Kids don't understand that. They think that's just unfair. How can it be that she or he got their license when they were 16? They had more sanity for some reason. There was a little more logic. They just seemed to be safer behind the wheel. I still don't trust you, Dad. I'm 32. I still don't trust you. And sometimes our point of reference is someone else. We think because God did this for them at this age, that he surely should do it for me at the same age. And there's nothing wrong with having a girlfriend. Matter of fact, we want our young men to have a girlfriend. We just don't want them to have a girlfriend at 12. But at some point, 24, 25, Mateo, anytime now. Anytime is fine. God's timing is always perfect timing. Our timing is usually a little messed up, like a kid's timing. How many of you have children, they asked for a job and you knew it wasn't the right time? They asked for a little more liberty, a little more freedom, more time to study at night. And you're saying, you're in fifth grade, you don't need to be able to study until 12. I know that your teacher does not give you that much homework. How many of your kids ask for more liberty at 15? They haven't even learned to take the garbage can out or make their bed, but they're asking for more liberty, not understanding that more liberty means more responsibility. But if it's the right time, we understand God's going to facilitate it. The authority is going to get behind it. God's going to bless it. And here's what we see in the Bible. We see every time there's an example that when God uses a person, when God puts his hand on that person, he's going to call them, he's going to send them forth. When we're talking about someone that's being sent forth, there's always a time, a space, a gap between their calling and their sending. I deal with this all the time. Young people, Bible college, out of Bible college. You guys have been to the park, you've seen these guys with their dogs. So you go and you watch this guy with a ball or a frisbee in his hand. He looks at that animal and says, sit, stay, stay, stay. And then he throws the ball or the frisbee, and that dog wants desperately to run. And he says, stay, 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 stay. I'm like, does he stutter? What's going on here? Stay. And I'm getting antsy at this point. I'm about ready to go fetch that ball. Like, man, I just like animals, but this is real torture here. I want to walk up to him and go, like, I'm from PETA. You are going to jail. And the dog just sits there. You know, desperately, his motor's revved up. It's like in fifth gear, just waiting to run out. And suddenly that owner says, get it! Man, he's gone. Comes back, sits him back down. Stay. Throws it again. Stay. Starts to stutter again. Stay, stay, stay. Have you ever felt like God had a plan for you and you knew you were going to do something and then he let you know that he had a plan for you and then he said, stay, 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 stay. And he wasn't stuttering. He was training. And in all the Bible, we see this. Joseph, he has this dream and he thinks he's going to be exalted to some kind of position, receive some kind of authority. 13 years later, Moses, raised in the palace, all this education, the wisdom of the Egyptians, the heart of a Jew, everything is prepared. He's 40 years old. You'd think that he'd have everything in place to be the great leader that God had called him to be. And God sends him out to the backside of a desert for 40 years and says, stay, stay. Stay. Decade passes, two, three. Stay. David. He's anointed. Can you imagine the emotions of this young man when he's anointed the king at the tender age, 17, 18 years of age? He's looking at his brother and they don't know what to think. And he goes to the palace, gets chased, spears thrown at him. He thinks he's going to inherit the throne at some point soon. He's now living out in the caves running for his life. And God says, stay. Stay right there. 13 years later. 13 years later. You see this in all the Bible. Paul, we're going through the book of Acts. Get saved. Now, depending on what theologian, what commentary you read after, I personally believe it was at least 10 years. Some would say it may have been as many as 14 years from its salvation to his first missionary journey. But young men seem to struggle with that, thinking that now that God has called me, and God said, well, I want to fill you, and I want to empower you, and I want to train you, and I want to teach you, and humility is a big part of this, so you may have to just stay until you at least learn one of these lessons here. Christ is our example. Go with me to John chapter 2. Christ was in training for 30 years. That's hard to believe. It's hard to believe he didn't perform his first miracle until he was 30. We see him at 12 there in the temple, and we would have thought by the time he was 15, he would have been choosing disciples and leading a congregation. But at 30, his mother there is wanting to push him out to the limelight. Look what he says in John chapter 2, verse 4. Jesus said to her, woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. This was God in the flesh at age 30. He knew there was a time, a perfectly set time, and now was not the time. Look what it says in chapter 7, verse 3. His brethren therefore said to him, depart hence. They don't believe that he's the Messiah, but they're saying, if you truly are the Messiah, why are you staying hidden? Why are you staying this house? You need to go reveal who you are. Depart hence and go into Judea, that thy disciples also may see the works that thou doest. For there is no man that doeth anything in secret, and he himself seeketh to be known openly. If thou do these things, show thyself to the world. For neither did his brethren believe in him. Then Jesus said to them, my time is not yet come. But your time, it's always ready. You don't understand timing. And God has a set time, and this is not the time, and this is not my time. And God has already pre-planned, and I'll wait and patiently allow him to reveal the time. Look what it says in verse 30. The book of John repeatedly uses this phrase, but then when they're seeking to take his life, verse 25 speaks of this, but we'll jump down to verse 30. Then they sought to take him, but no man laid hands on him. Why? Because his hour was not yet come. And in life, it's easy to get focused on the destination. For a young lady, that destination may be marriage. For a young man with a calling, that destination may be a ministry or a church or a leadership position or the mission field. For someone, a mother, it's the birth of a child. For a man that's supposed to be providing for the family, it's a raise, it's a different position there, a new job, whatever it is. All of us at some point have gotten frustrated with God's timing. And talk to him about in prayer, we call it prayer, but basically letting God know. By the way, God, I'm not in agreement here with your timing, and just hoping that you go ahead and fix this here real quickly so our relationship stays good. Usually our focus is on the destination. We struggle with enjoying the journey, and waiting is not a waste of time. Waiting doesn't mean we're sitting there in our hands. Waiting doesn't mean that we're not doing anything. Waiting means we're being as productive as we possibly can be, knowing that this is a time of life, a season of life that God is using to develop us, a season that we're supposed to be learning and our faith is supposed to be strengthened. And sometimes he uses this wait just to reveal our motives. How many of you ever waited long enough to realize your motives were wrong? And then after the wait, you said, you know what, God, don't worry about that. You remember that prayer? Don't worry about that. Isaiah 30:18 says, blessed are all they that wait for him. Now, when we're talking about timing, timing means the right season. Go back with me to Genesis chapter 21 for just a moment. several years ago. I preached on seasons. I'm not going to preach on that tonight. But if we're going to understand timing, we have to understand seasons, just like a farmer doesn't go out in the winter and start planting the seeds. He has to wait till the right time. There's a season to plant. There's a season to water. There's a season to harvest. And all of us want all year round to be that fruitful season. And sometimes we get to hating the snow. We hate the cold. Sometimes we get to hating the heat. I wish summer would end, and I wish it would end now. For some Texans, about July, they're tired of the summer, especially those that work outside. I get calls from those that are up north, and they tell me by December they are tired of the winter. We are kicking back, relaxing. I mean, we're celebrating Christmas, and it's 72 degrees outside. Not in my house. It's like 86 because my wife has the fireplace going. That thing's been rolling for 2 months now. She told me the other day that it was chilly enough to light the fire. I know what that means. It dropped below 70. That is Kim's cue to throw firewood in the fireplace. But life's made up of seasons. We understand this. Every part of life is a season. And even we need to teach our children the lesson of seasons of life, because marriage has seasons. Not all of marriage is summer. It's not all winter. It's not all fall. It's not all spring. School has its seasons. And there are some seasons that you're going to like less than others, and some that you enjoy more than others. But at some point, the lesson of life is you can't go through life hating a season. It's going to make a miserable 3 months if you hate snow and you live in New York. Have you ever met someone that's constantly talking about the weather somewhere else? Oh, boy, the weather over there is absolutely beautiful. Well, the problem is you live right here. So you might want to start to enjoy the weather right here. But all of life is made up of seasons. You can't allow your kids to go through life hating school because they don't like the season that is seventh grade, or they don't like the season that is fourth grade, or they don't like, teachers hate sixth grade and kids love sixth grade. Their brain stops working, but they're the king of the hill, tip of the top. They go out to recess. They're the fastest. They're the biggest. They're going to score all the touchdowns. They get to run the football team. They get to growl at everyone else. Hey, let them enjoy their time in the sun, because it's going to end soon enough. Then they get to go to seventh grade and they forget how to walk. They look lost. They're trying to be the big shot, but they're the bottom of the totem pole. Everybody, 10th, 11th, 12th grade is picking on him. Well, I don't understand, everybody's picking on him. He's in seventh grade. That's what happens in seventh grade. Did you forget seventh grade? Pastor, can you do anything about it? I guess we can cancel school on a national level. It's life, but you can't allow that child to hate a season of life because it's uncomfortable or because it's not their favorite season. And Abram had gone through several decades of winter, and he hadn't received a harvest. You know what the joy of life is? I can't imagine farming with no harvest. I never took any pleasure in a garden with a harvest. So I'm going to ask if my mom was Hitler. No, she wasn't Hitler. She wasn't Mussolini. She was a combination. And some people say that she likes to garden. No, she likes to watch her kids garden. I tried to convince her that rototillers were invented long before 1985. Way before 1984. But she was convinced that that soil turned over much nicer with a young man and a hoe in his hands. Now the problem with gardening, can you imagine if you go through all that work and then there's no fruit? And guess what Abraham was doing? He was going through all this season that was just work and work and work and work, and there was no fruit. Have you ever gone through one of those seasons? Anybody ever had a class or a ministry or even working with your own children that you were doing a lot of the work and you were seeing very little fruit? Anybody? And you got discouraged. And that's exactly what was going on here with Abraham. So he had been obedient. He had been doing God's will. But at this point, there wasn't a whole lot of fruit to show for it. And the fruit that he wanted anyways was a son. And those seasons of life, that season is God determined. And don't you wish that life wasn't set up like the cycles and the seasons of the year, where you knew 3 months and they even give you a date on the calendar, and this season is over. Anybody ever went through a season of life and you were hoping that God would put a date on it, in 3 months it would just end? Maybe it was a season of sickness. Maybe it was a season of sorrow. Maybe it was a season of frustration. Maybe it was a season of a wayward child. Maybe it was a season of a problem in your marriage. Maybe it was a season where you're just living frustrated. But here's the problem with seasons of life. Usually God allows us to go through the season until we've actually learned our lesson. So this season had extended itself for some reason. It had a purpose. God was trying to teach Abraham something. He was determining the length. And at some point, the best thing you can do in your spiritual life is to determine, predetermine, I'm going to enjoy every season of life. I'm just going to enjoy it, whatever it is. It's funny how youth are in a hurry to move on to the next season. They're in fifth grade, they want to be in junior high. They're in junior high, they want to be in high school. They're in high school, they want to be in college. They're in college, they want to be out and married. When they're married, they want to have a career. When they're having a career, they want kids. Then when they have kids, they want grandkids. And then they want to be 18 again. It's like no one can get happy with whatever season of life that they're in at the moment. To me, every season has a pleasure. And whether that's 4th of July or summer vacation or a little bit of additional freedom in the schedule, longer days, or fall, and you're a big fan of going back to school and anniversary Sunday, and you love the thought of Thanksgiving, and your body is built to add an additional 20 pounds over the holiday season. Maybe you look forward to all of that. Christmas for you. Whatever season I am in, I think I can find a way to enjoy it. Otherwise, life is going to become a long misery if we haven't figured out whatever season God has specifically designed this season. He has a purpose in this season. It's a gift from God to us, and we get ourselves in trouble. Go back to Genesis 21 when we don't understand He's in charge. And if you're young people, let me say this before we move to verse 9. If you're young, enjoy your energy because it doesn't last forever. Enjoy feeling good. Enjoy being fast. Enjoy being thin. Enjoy low cholesterol, low blood pressure, and no skin cancer. Enjoy the fact that you can jump and run and nothing hurts the next day. Enjoy your free time. Enjoy singleness. Enjoy your lack of responsibilities. Enjoy the fact you can be stupid and people overlook it. Enjoy the season because at some point it changes. If you're midlife, enjoy your family. Enjoy them. It doesn't last forever. Those kids grow up. Thank God. They grow. Enjoy your job. Enjoy your decent health. Enjoy your ministry responsibilities. Instead of looking back, instead of looking forward, if you're elderly, you say, Pastor, what do I have to enjoy? Grandkids. They tell me, at least, that's a great joy. Enjoy your accomplishments. Enjoy your wisdom. Enjoy the fact that you can look at the foolish mistakes of the rest of the people and say, yeah, I've done that. I just don't keep doing it. Enjoy the fact that you don't have to expend as much energy as before. Enjoy the fact that you have kids now that can do what you don't need to do and don't want to do because your body doesn't feel like doing it. Enjoy the season. But getting impatient with God's timing, it always gets you in trouble. Look what it says, verse 9. Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian. Now, at this time, you're talking about a boy that's 18 years old, and he's mocking. 16. Wherefore she said unto Abram, cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. And the thing was very grievous in Abram's sight because of his son. Verse 14, Abram rose up early in the morning, took bread and a bottle of water, and gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder and the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. Abram, this is your disaster because you got impatient. How many times have we gotten impatient with God and we tried to make something happen that He didn't plan or not at that moment? And I think about the times I got in a hurry I look back, I thank God for ministry in the churches that he allowed us to establish. But we certainly have come to the conclusion at some point that first church was not about us building a ministry, but rather about God trying to build a man for ministry. And a lot of times in our youth, we like to think that we have a lot to offer God. How God must smile. And he knows when, he knows where. And when we race ahead, when we get in a hurry, that's when young people marry wrong. That's where ministries are messed up. That's when people get hurt. And Abram, in impatience, not understanding what God was doing, was trying to hit the fast forward button. And the result was, now 16, 17, 18 years later, he's still paying the consequence, and he's got to get this woman. Can you imagine the angst in his heart and the frustration he's sinking? This is the mess that I caused. And he gives this woman some bread and a bottle of water, and he says goodbye and sends them down the road. It hurts us to think about it, and that's not even our child. That's the disaster he made. When we get up ahead of God, you know what we end up doing? Getting frustrated, start griping, complaining. Anybody been there? And the way to avoid that is say, God has a set time. There's a God in heaven that is a God of times and seasons. And he knows the exact time, the exact moment when I need to take the next step. He'll make that pretty obvious. Meanwhile, while I'm waiting, I'll be patient. I'll obey his voice. I'll do his will. I'll do what I'm supposed to do. I'll be as productive as I'm supposed to be. But those times in life when I wanted to lose my mind, I was in a hurry to get a building. I was in a hurry to make a move. I was in a hurry to start a church. I was in a hurry to get a degree. I was in a hurry racing ahead of God. One of the best lessons I ever learned in life was to relax, work as hard as I can, but relax in the thought that God is sovereign. Amen. And he knows when it's best for me. And when that time comes, he'll let me know that it's time to move ahead. It's time to take that step. It's time when it's his time.
The Capital City Baptist Church is located at 1300 Red Street in beautiful Austin, Texas. We'd invite you to join us if you're in town. 10 a.m. Sunday mornings, 6 p.m. Sunday night, and 7:30 each and every Wednesday evening. Our phone number is 512-447-9454, but I'd like to point your attention specifically to our website, capitalcitybaptist.org. There you'll find information regarding service times, the staff, and all about Capital City Baptist Church. Additionally, you can find an archive of previously preached messages there for you to download, enjoy, and pass on to friends and family. Again, that website is capitalcitybaptist.org. That's capital with an O, citybaptist.org. Be sure and tell a friend and do your best to join us again for Pulpit Echoes, a ministry of the Capital City Baptist Church.